The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
If you were listening yesterday, by the way, if you weren't listening yesterday, if there's anything you miss at any point, newstalk.com, search for The Anton Savage Show. Everything is uploaded there as podcasts. One of the things that is uploaded as podcast was our discussion with Sarah Keogh, our resident dietitian, who was talking all things diet. And one of the things that she was talking about was how in cancer patients, one of the most, the leading causes of death in cancer patients isn't actually cancer, it's malnutrition. That's something in the order of 40% of people with cancer die of malnutrition. And this reminded me of a thing that I had seen Professor Luke O'Neill say at a Cancer Society event, because they are, of course, celebrating Daffodil Day on the 22nd of March. And he was talking about revolutionary treatments in both immunotherapy and in terms of dealing with malnutrition and cancer patients. And it occurred to me, why have Hamlet without the prince when the prince was available? So, Professor Luke O'Neill, lovely to see you.
Thank you. Can we start with the malnutrition thing?
We are on the cusp of great stuff in terms of dealing with that.
We are, yeah. Malnutrition is a very, very serious thing in cancer patients. One reason is the tumour has a massive appetite for nutrients. So therefore, there's an imbalance in nutrition there. And that's why nutrition is so important there. But I think more excitingly, I think like cachexia. So cancer patients lose muscle. And they lose fat tissue, and the whole metabolism in their body can go haywire, basically. And it's very serious and can be a cause of death. And now a trial just published can help patients not become cachectic, is the word. A drug called Ponsegromab, a terrible name, I know. It's blocking a natural molecule that's suppressing appetite in cancer patients. Isn't that interesting? There's a thing called GDF-15.
And that's one of the things that leads to the wastage. It's just a lack of desire to eat.
It's a bit like the dreaded Ozempic. You make a natural hormone and that can regulate your appetite and your metabolism. In cancer patients, that goes through the roof and causes nausea and loss of appetite. This drug blocks that. And the first time ever now, they've shown this drug can help patients limit cachexia, as they call it, and yet less muscle wasting happened. The patients put on weight, which was great to see in this trial. Now, again, it's the usual thing, phase two trial, they need to do a phase three to make sure it's correct. But it was really sort of hit the headlines because it was the first drug to do that.
And the other area then where there is significant potential developments is linked to your own core area of expertise, which is immunotherapy and drugs preventing inflammatory diseases.
Exactly. Yeah, well, the big success story in cancer therapy in the past, 15 years, is immunotherapy. So these are drugs that wake up the immune system. And we've known for a long time, actually, the immune system can kill tumours, just like it can kill viruses, as we know, in bacteria. But there's been evidence for a long time, actually, get the immune system going, it'll attack this alien tumour in your body, you know? And they've had a hard time trying to control that. There was efforts even 80, 90 years ago to do this. And then finally, around about 15, 20 years ago...
And why did the efforts not work 80 or 90 years ago?
Initially, they were thinking that stimulate the immune system really hard. They were even giving people bacteria, can you believe it? There was some evidence of infection helping to fight tumours. The immune system kind of wakes up when you're infected and then goes off and attacks the tumour. The trouble is, if you overactivate the immune system, it's nasty and you get all kinds of nasty consequences of that. So they tried it for a long time and it was too toxic. It did work in some people, but it was too toxic. But then, beginning with a thing called checkpoint blockade, was the technical term for this, they see hints of this working. And now 1 in 5 cancers now can be almost cured with immunotherapy. So we're starting now. We'd love it to be more than 1 in 5, of course. But the signs are now they're heading in the right direction. And if we can just get the immune system in the right state, potentially this could be the best way to treat cancer, really.
I assume you still have the risk, though, of an overactive immune system doing more harm than it does good.
You do. That's the problem. Yeah, you get a thing, another great phrase, and that the cytokine storm happens and various things can happen because your immune system now is overactive. Of course, there's a big effort now to limit that as well. And a company I'm involved in actually is trying to limit the side effects of this process, because obviously then that would be much better for the patients. Some it's too severe and they come off the therapy, you know. And even worse, some get autoimmune disease because the immune system is off kilter. But having said that, success, lung cancer, breast cancer, 1 in 5 are surviving at the moment on immunotherapy. And we'd love that to go up to more than 1 in 5, of course, ultimately.
The other thing where apparently there is great potential is it CAR-T?
CAR-T, that's exactly right. Yeah. Now again, as you may remember, Anton, from the old pandemic days, T cells are a key part of the immune system. They're called T cells. They're the ones that kill the cancer cells. And if you can get the T cells going, they'll go in and and beat up the cancer is the idea. And again, about 15, 20 years ago, someone said, let's engineer the T cells to hunt down the cancer cell and kill it. Now, the trouble is, it's very elaborate. You've got to bleed the person, engineer their T cells in a test tube to give them kind of a smart bomb, as it were, you know, put them back in the patient, and now it goes and hunts down the cancer cells. Now, initially, at the moment, mainly it's in leukemias and blood cancers, because it's in your blood and you inject the T cells back in the blood, and the T cell can swim and find the leukemic cell and kill it. And it's great.
And this is being done currently.
Absolutely, being done currently. And certain leukemias, lymphomas are cured with CAR T, which is fantastic to see. We'd love it to work in what I call solid tumours, which means lung and cancer and breast. The trouble there is they're nasty environments. A big tumour is growing in your lungs. The T cell tries to get in there and then dies in the fight. So the big effort now is to get those T cells to be more robust and go into the tissue and really do a good job. And again, the good news is there's hints of this beginning to work, but it's more difficult there. But still, because it works in leukemias, why wouldn't it work in solid tumours is the idea.
And this is tailored medical intervention to the individual patient. It isn't that you are getting a standardised drug. It's that they are taking something in your own body and engineering it and replacing it.
It's very elaborate. I mean, on average, it takes 22 days from taking the T cells out to engineering them, growing them up in a test tube, if you can imagine, putting them back in again. So it's very elaborate. It's expensive. Now, St. James's Hospital offers this for leukemias, which is great to see. We'd love it to be more straightforward, of course. And another thing I'm working on is, instead of taking the T cells out, right, and engineering them, could you inject someone and engineer them in the body? And then you wouldn't need to take them out, if you know what I mean. And again, people are moving in that direction next. And I guess what the message is, all of this is telling us we're heading in the right direction. If we can optimise this, it'll get even better. So there's huge efforts afoot.
Well, give us a little bit on the direction that we are heading, because one of the things that's happened, and it's slightly unfortunate, it's a bit like what happened, maybe I'm wrong, you can tell me if I have this wrong. I always think it's something like AIDS, where you look at it and it was a defining horror for a generation. And then we sort of forgot about it because it's fixed. Likewise, things like cervical cancer, you sort of forget it because it's fixed.
Yeah.
But it's amazing that people aren't dying of these things anymore. The steps that we've taken in cancer becoming a chronic condition rather than a terminal condition, they are very significant.
They are extremely significant. And the good part of this is, once you see one success, right, all the drug companies go, I'll work in that. There's a chance it's going to work, you know. And then when they spend all the money on research, there's a chance it might actually work. So what all this is doing is telling all the drug, and I know them all, of course, they're all saying immunotherapy. Because now that we're seeing this progress, let's do more. And you can't beat ingenuity, Anton. The human brain is great, isn't it? You know, and they'll tweak it. They'll try different combinations of things. There's a huge amount of activity happening in the area, which is great.
On the topic of knowing all of the various different drug companies, among the list of people that the American administration is turning their ire towards, the drug companies are high up there. When you're talking to the execs in the companies, how wary are they? How unsettled are they? Because they're in the crosshairs.
Yeah. There's always a tricky bit. They are businesses. I'll never forget that, you know. And drug companies have shareholders, you know. The other thing that I find fascinating is many of our pension funds are invested in drug companies. Did you know that? So if drug companies begin to go down, pension funds get threatened. So it's a complicated economic argument, you know. Oh, they're concerned. But remember, they want the FDA to be reformed. Now, the FDA is the federal agency in America that approves drugs and puts up regulations and all kinds of things about trials, which is good. But there's been a feeling it's been overly bureaucratic. And drug companies would love to speed up the process and make it more efficient, because it can take years. A big frustration for me is, in my lab, you might make a discovery. It might take you 10 years to get to the clinic, because of all these various hurdles that need to be jumped and various things, you know.
Is it that long?
From when you make the discovery to getting the medicine in. So one example is, we made a discovery in 2015. Our trials began running last year. So it took 9 years to get from the discovery to the trial. It can be because you're checking things carefully and getting more evidence, but there's the phase 1, 2, 3 business. The FDA can take a year to respond, can you believe it, to applications. So I think what the dreaded... we won't name him, but Robert F. Kennedy, he's trying to reform the FDA. That won't necessarily be a bad thing, but of course you don't take shortcuts either. It has to be very, very careful.
And is it a bit like the security backstop? Is the FDA the main game in town, or is there a European equivalent?
There is.
We see pressure for the European equivalent to get more.
The EMEA, of course, in Brussels, and they approve drugs as well. They're another organisation. And we have one in Ireland as well. Each country has its own regulator as well, so it's a complicated system, mainly to make sure it's safe and protect patients. But the trouble is, if it gets overly bureaucratic, it just takes too long, is the view of the moment. Yeah.
To come back to cancer to close out, if there was a particular type of cancer where you are optimistic for the next breakthroughs, or where the medical community is optimistic for the next breakthroughs, Is it blood? Is it breast? Where do we think we're likely to see?
We need to see more progress in lung. Pancreatic is the big one, as you may know, because once you're diagnosed with pancreatic, it's a pretty grim future in a sense, you know. So we'd love to see progress there. So they're going after those ones. And then extremely important, and the most of all, is childhood cancers, of course, like neuroblastoma, for instance. There's a 50% mortality rapidly with that type of cancer. And again, they're working on those because they know that's where the big unmet need is. And they're trying all these different things against those ones. So we'd love to see progress in those. And now, you never know. It's the usual thing. You got to be careful. You can't say we're going to crack it either necessarily, you know. But certainly, it's not for want of trying is the best way to put it.
Luke, thank you very much, Professor Luke O'Neill.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.